The morning show on Trib Live Radio is brought to you by the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, recently highlighted as the face of financial guidance in Pittsburgh Magazine.
We're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other.
The Trib Live Radio Triple Threat. Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and now Tim Benz, right here on Trib Live Radio.
It's reunion night. Trevor Daly, Rob Scuderi, first of two, home at home. Penguins and the Hawks at Consolidated Energy Center tonight, 7 p.m. drop of the puck. Get a little Pens fix in here, guys. And Penguins with a win tonight could theoretically pull back into a playoff position. Playoffs? Probably way too early to be even thinking about that, but it's
I don't
very...
think it is.
No?
No.
I think some people don't like to maybe till the second half. Or
well, I don't know if like pulling into the playoff is. I think the biggest thing that's happened in this 4-1-1 stretch, instead of being 6 points out with four teams between you and the last spot, now they're the first team out. So if you're chasing one spot, that's the significant thing. I mean, well, yeah, you examine it every day and how many points you are, but you don't want to fall too far back. Or the big thing is to have too many teams in between you, because they're all not going to go south.
Yeah. And you know, the fact that it might take fewer points this year to make it into the playoffs, you know, maybe it wasn't as dire as we all thought a week ago when they were 0-4 under Sullivan. They're, Tim, in a decent position here. Now, tough opponent, and probably the opponent that smacks them in the face the most directly of, here we are, this is what you should have been, right? The Chicago Blackhawks.
Absolutely. This is no doubt who everybody thought the Penguins would be. Multiple cups, stars showing up in big situations, combination of toughness and skill, winning big games in big situations, maintaining the buzz through the generation of players. You know, nobody wants to trade Kane or Taves. You know, there was talk of trading Sid or Malkin, and in fact it was being endorsed, you know. Chris Letang was eventually supposed to be what Duncan Keith is. And it's just the only guy who, of the group, ironically, who has turned into something beyond what the Blackhawks have in their similar situation as the goalie, is Marc-Andre Fleury.
Kane, I guess, you know, with his off-ice troubles, maybe they wanted him traded before the season began with his scandal of sorts. But now that he's scored, what, 23 goals? Or
and,
he's got...
and that the charges were dropped.
Well, the charges were dropped, yeah. All that it seems to be well past at this point. Of course, Hoss is on that team, which twists the knife even more for a lot of folks. Although,
especially you.
As you guys know, it was one of my faves. Still is.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Because we got such pleasure out of him failing in Detroit while Pittsburgh succeeded, and then he has gone to Chicago and had way more success there than the Penguins have had in the years since.
Yeah.
It was funny to play on those two teams back-to-back years and be losing end both times, though.
Well, and of course, when you walk into Consol up at the press level, that's one of the first pictures you see, right, is the back of Hossa as the Penguins are celebrating a goal in the finals that year?
Yes.
You guys notice that picture when you come up on the media level?
How could you not?
Yeah.
I believe Tom McMillan, every time you come in to cover a game, says, have you seen this picture?
Now, the Hawks have won three in a row. They've won six out of eight, so they're playing pretty well. And they're great at home. So if you weren't going to get them, tonight is the better night to do it. Penguins are playing well themselves, though, right? I mean, this is, I don't want to say as good as they've played all year. I hate to go down the signature state of the team route, but if you were going to catch them, this would be a good time to do it, right? Feeling
yeah,
like
8-9
is pretty
corner. Good. 8-9 was good under
that's true.
Mike Johnston.
Yeah,
however,
but the way they were doing it, 8-9, even then we were like, eh.
What makes you feel better about the way they've played of late is their best players seem to be playing as well as they can. Like Sid is scoring. Gino is scoring. Kessel is scoring. Letang is getting lots of assists and playing well since he's come back. They still, by the way, have only won one game since he's been out of the lineup all year.
Chris Letang, yeah, it's incredible. 1-7-1, is that what the numbers are? I think 1-7-1 without him. He's been paired up with Mata. That seems to be the no-doubt pairing, right? Since they traded for Daly, he's now been back on a third pair. That's probably better for him, right? Daly and Cole's not a bad third pair. You don't want Daly to be on your top pairing. After the Scuderi trade was made, it seemed like that was a... Well, I don't know. What did you guys think of the trade when it happened, and now that we've seen Daly for a while, is it a Was it a
I think it's
positive?
What they needed. I think Scuderi was made a scapegoat because he wasn't as good as he was when he played here the first time, nor as he was in L.A. But I think if Scuderi was paired with the right guy, he's still a good defensive defenseman. I think there's a space for him on a lot of NHL rosters. But you go younger, and you need the trend. Look how much better they've been. Not only was Letang out, but Scuderi was. And with you had Letang and Daly. You're moving the puck up ice a lot quicker. As I was saying yesterday, there's no statistic for how quickly you get a pass, an open breakout pass to the neutral zone. And that's where the difference is. You know, a lot of the Canadian experts thought that that's the biggest difference with Crosby this year. He's never been a guy that, you know, gets into the zone and then takes the puck. And, you know, he's a guy that's flying through the neutral zone to get you in transition. I think your transition game's been much better, certainly with those two guys making up a third of their defense.
Is it fair to say they wanted it more in that Islanders game? Like, that's an intangible, right? You're just evaluating their pace of play and, like, their hunger level.
They looked very – they hustled. There was a lot of hustle in their game that night, and there wasn't for the Islanders who I – they played. No, Toronto played the night before they played here. I don't think the Islanders did.
The thing about the Daly trade, just to go back to that before we get off, because I want to chime in there too. It's a good point to be raised because Scuderi, he doesn't. This is going to sound bad. He wasn't doing anything well. And I don't mean to oversimplify it or hammer him that hard, but what they were missing was something he can't do. What they were missing is what Guy was saying. He's better at moving the puck. Daly is. So you got somebody who gave you something that the other player could not do. And quite honestly, Scuderi, for being positionally sound, stay at home, even that wasn't going well for him. So while they might have lost the defensive smarts or the defensive intuition, it's being covered up much more by the fact that you've got a guy who can at least get the puck out of his own zone, move it when there is a transition opportunity, and could do some things offensively well that Scuderi couldn't do. So, yeah. You know, even though he was being asked to fill a minor defensive-only role, he can't do that as well as he used to. Daly can still move the puck pretty well, even if he's never going to come around and be all that good of a defensive player.
And Scuderi will always be known for what he did great, and that was the piece, right? The blocking shots, and he was huge in their cup win. So, I mean, I feel like we rip Rob Scuderi too much.
I agree. That's why I started that off.
Yeah.
But he's not what they need, especially when Letang was not playing.
For him to be remembered more fondly, he needed to leave.
Okay, that's fair. Now, the Lions, since they had an optional skate this morning, they've had Cullen up on the Malkin wing, which was not intended, right? When Jim Rutherford put this team together, he did not look for Matt Cullen to be your top six left winger.
No, he looked for Matt Cullen to be a healthy scratch, I think, a lot of the times. It was a perfect world.
He's looked okay, though. He had the pass to Kessel that set up their first goal against New York. He had the shorthanded goal to put him up 4-0 in that game. That's not a long-term fit, right? I mean, well, maybe it is. I don't know. Who knows? At this point, they've had Sheary and Hornquist on the third line. So whatever works, it's working. I wouldn't change it now either. Can that sustain itself, though, I guess would be my question. Or at some point, is that going to be an issue that you're counting on Matt Cullen to be a left wing up with Malkin?
What do they think? Maybe it's just kind of coalesced nicely, but what do they think he gives them more than anything aside from the ability to put Gino on the wing for the face-off and for him to win the face-off since Gino's not been that great in the circle this year? I mean, is that just it to gain possession in the offensive zone or, you know, maybe even in the defensive zone, like after an icing or something so they don't give up a goal? Is that it? They just want him to take the face-off and then play the wing? Because that's a pretty you know, specific task to ask of one person who otherwise is supposed to be playing in free flow rhythm with one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, because when they signed him, Guy, that's what he was kind of billed as, right? Like a responsible fourth line center that could win faceoffs for you. And
like Talbot could do that with Gino too. You know, when he was playing with Malkin.
Well, once again, I think you're getting too excited about you're projecting what's going to happen down the road by one line change on a Tuesday morning in early January. It doesn't.
Well, they've scored 10 goals in two games, so I'm excited. I guess I'm
overreacting. No, I am. Like, but I also think that line chemistry is a weird thing. I mean, I thought Kessel and Crosby were going to be great together, and they're not. And you look at a guy, you go back to some of the guys that blossomed playing with Mario Lemieux. That couldn't do it with anybody else. Look at a Robbie Brown or a Warren Young or people like that. So those, you look at them and think, wow, they're putting Warren Young on the same line as Mario Lemieux or Robbie Brown scoring points playing with Mario Lemieux. So I they obviously see something at practice or see something that makes them you think that those things are going to work together. Sometimes even a guy that you don't think, let's say if a defensively responsible guy that can win some faceoffs could be a perfect guy to play out there with Malkin, because you don't want a bunch of free. Because I don't consider him. I love Malkin's. I don't want to say he's not defensively responsible, because I love his overall attitude. I mean, but I don't think he's the greatest defensive forward in the world. I mean, the guy was willing to drop the gloves if he has to. He stands up for teammates when he has to. But you never know how when something like that will click, because he's out there doing what Malkin doesn't do, allowing him to do what he can do more easily.
He's like a basketball point guard that gets a lot of steals in the defensive end. You know, like, he gambles a lot. He'll rip the puck. You know, he'll lift your stick and take it away. But he also occasionally gets blown by or is not in the right space at the right time.
Right.
That's an interesting way to put it. Well, here's what Sullivan says about Cullen. He's a smart player. He's played with offensive guys in his career. He's responsible in all three zones. He has the ability to think the game on their level. I think that can help the line. And so far, it's been pretty good. Okay, so he's talking about his intelligence. And as you say, guy, maybe Gino's not that responsible. This guy is. Kessel says he's fast. He can move. He's very skilled. He's played out there a long time, and he understands the game. He understands where to be. He makes it easy. So, I mean, that's a pretty good endorsement from Kessel, who's now back with Gino as a pairing. You know, they like those two together.
Borky said last night, in talking about this topic, that Cullen, when he was with the Nashville Predators, got bumped into Mike Fisher's role for a while, like the second-line center. And he was very good for about 10 to 15 games at it when Fisher got hurt. In a short spurt, he can handle something like this, and then maybe as the ice time and the offensive opportunities increase, he gets overexposed or over-leveraged when he does it for too long.
With those two guys, he may never get the opportunity, though, right? It might be perfect. Like, he may never need an opportunity with Phil and Gino. If those guys are playing the way they do, just stay out of their way, right? I mean, just be responsible.
I don't know about that. Like, for instance, you know, look at over the years who Gino has played with. You know, it's ironic, but you know, when he played with Sikora and Malone, that was a great line. You know, they did really well together. They worked really well together. When he played with James Neal, nobody played as well with Neal as Gino did, right? Mm-hmm. But they won the cup when he had Fedotenko and Talbot as his line mates.
Well, think of just what the complication. We're talking about lines. Just think about the difference there is even playing with Sid or Gino. If you're a player and you're told you're playing with either one of these guys, you would think that you would love that. You're getting to play with one of these two guys, but they're very different to play with. It takes different kind of players to succeed with both of those guys.
Hmm. By the way, Fleury, the last goalie off today, so he'll likely play tonight. Optional skate. No line combos from this morning, but you'd expect that to stay the same as they're on a little bit of a streak here.
I know, it's a big 48 hours for them. And like you said, it's tough to win in Chicago, Ken. I don't expect, and if they would lose there tomorrow night, as long as they don't get blown out or whatever, if they split these two games, I think it's still a continued sign. First of all, back-to-back games are never easy to play the second game. At least when you're playing the same team, though, you're both in the same boat. But it's back-to-back games, which is difficult. It's against the same team, which is difficult. And it's against the defending Stanley Cup champions, which is difficult. So if they really have made some strides, they'll at least get 2 points out of this.
Then after that, they go two off, one on, two off, one on for a while.
But 5 of 6 on the road after this total, including Montreal this weekend at the Bell Center. So
who've really gone in the dumper after that perfect start.
They have, but they got Gallagher back, and they look good in the Winter Classic, which brings us to that game, and this was a Washington Post story you alerted me to, Tim, and they were talking about the ratings being low for the Winter Classic. Since its creation, the outdoor game has gotten ratings between 2.2 and 2.5, but has been below 2 for the last 2 years. This year's game drew a 1.6, the lowest in the Classic's history. And is there a way to fix it, basically? So this thing had possible ways that you could have tweaked it. Do you like any of these?
Well, the first thing you do is not have a Canadian team in. I'm sorry. You don't get no ratings points for the people in Montreal watching. And you know, they had their own outdoor classic up there. So let them have theirs, and we'll have ours. That's the first thing. The second thing you do is eliminate all the other games. Ugh. When the Penguins played Buffalo, and it's snowing, and Crosby scores a shootout goal, and there's 88,000 people at the stadium, sure, it's great. When there's four or five of these a year, and Canada has one, and there's ones all over the place, and, it loses its luster.
It was new. It was different. It was unique. I distinctly remember being up there in Buffalo, and about the middle of the second period, I was like, I could go home now. Yeah, I wanted to see how it ended and everything, but it was the day was kind of a grind. You know, it just felt like I shouldn't be doing this for a hockey game. I invest this much time for a football game, but not for a hockey game. And I was ready for it to be over by that point, and I didn't need to see another one. I covered the one at Heinz Field because it was here, but I remember being very excited for the one in Buffalo and kind of went through the one in Heinz Field. It was been there, done that, got the T-shirt kind of vibe for me. And I wonder if other people are feeling that just by watching it.
More is not always better, man. Yeah. I mean, we all found that out in college when we felt pretty good after five beers.
We did find that out?
Or after the eighth piece of pizza. Oh, this is so good. I'm eating six more. Keep it a treat. Keep it a once a year. Keep it a classic.
One of you guys was talking about how you're surprised to turn on the TV and all of a sudden it was in Foxborough, not Fenway.
That was me, yeah.
I mean, you put it in this. We're already circling through the same cities already. We've kind of done this. You know, one of the suggestions was do what people have been asking for a long time here, which is like throw a game in State College and have the Penguins play the Flyers there.
Yeah, that would get my attention.
Or throw a game in South Bend and have the Blackhawks play the Red Wings in South Bend or something like that.
Well, the whole thing started, apparently. The idea was to do a Boston-New York game at Yankee Stadium because of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. They thought that would work. But Yankee Stadium was old, and they didn't want to host it. So that's why Buffalo agreed to host it, and then they decided to have Pittsburgh there, I guess probably for the Crosby factor. I guess that put it over the top. But, yeah, I think that is important, the rivalries. But Wyshynski said from Yahoo, he wrote this Monday, ratings are less of an issue for the NHL. It's about what happens on site. On site, the league and its teams are making money hand over fist on gate receipts and on merchandise.
Yeah, that's a good point. And
yeah,
that did strike me. You know, even as I was reading the story, it hit me. Is this really about the nationality of it, or is it more about the regional application?
Yeah, what's Gillette hold? Tim, what was he?
67,000.
Yeah, it's
That's four games. That's four games worth of attendance for most NHL teams.
Some of the tickets were like $600 a pop. I mean, I can't believe people pay that. But
yeah, if they can keep making it feel new and feel unique within the markets, there probably isn't a concern.
Well, like, for example, you were talking about it. You wanted to see it and experience it in Buffalo. When they had the one, was it in Anaheim? Was it the Kings and the Ducks that played? That intrigued me because they had like beach volleyball set up. I'm like, how in the hell are they keeping this ice cold? That even though it wasn't the standard, the snow flurries in Buffalo and what you think of, that still held intrigue for me. There were palm trees there, and they had ice out there, and there were side
stories. They did a better job of it than we did here in Pittsburgh.
Field, right?
Not through anybody's fault in Pittsburgh, just what the weather was. And however they did it well. You know, and again, to underscore the point that Wyshynski made, like I just said, I didn't really feel I wasn't as excited as most people were to go to the game at Heinz Field, having seen the one in Buffalo. But if they were to ever do Flyers Penguins in State College, I'd want to see that.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And if I was a Blackhawks fan who was also a Notre Dame fan, I would want to see Blackhawks Red Wings in South Bend. So if they could figure out a way to regionally keep these games relevant, then maybe it doesn't matter. But the problem, though, Ken, is like even though I agree with Wyshynski's thinking there, is that how the league thinks?
Or I don't know.
Does the league want this? The league has kind of said it wants this to be its All-Star game. They've been less than bashful about suggesting that, and then the All-Star game is almost more of the afterthought. They want this to be the big national midwinter stamp.
Right. Like, I can read you Bettman's quotes, but it doesn't matter because nobody would believe him if he could be totally lying. He says there's an insatiable appetite for these games. We're projecting them for years out. It's, everybody wants a game. It's impactful for the community, blah, blah, blah. But it all depends on are they making money off it. And it's not a real good watch on TV, really, right? I mean, they've tried this Skycam thing, but it's hard to get a real good look at it. And if it's two teams you don't care about, it's not that captivating.
No, I mean, I saw the tweets complaining about the camera angle and all that. But, I mean, like, you know, I did not agree with that. I've never really thought that the camera angles were all that big of a deal. Maybe the first year in Buffalo, but you know, that's a pretty old, outdated stadium anyway.
More troubling than all of this is the news that you alerted me. Tim, you like break news to me every morning. It's a little disturbing, actually. That they're going to do the college Final Four on New Year's Eve again next year? Is that definite?
Yeah, they're trying to.
It's two out of every 3 years. That was the original plan.
They're trying to shove this down everybody's throat, and they're going to stand
that's,
by it.
That's my vote tomorrow. That's Jagoff of the Week vote. Come on. It was a total failure. I mean, Winter Classic was okay. The Final Four on New Year's Eve, total failure. And those ratings do matter.
And it laid out so perfectly to just do the games on New Year's Day and a Friday, and then have Saturday available for Notre Dame against Ohio State. Seriously.
It's just weird.
Yeah, Notre Dame, you had all the opportunity in the world, and if you wanted to, that's when you make, you know what, that's when you make the Tax Slayer Bowl or the Alamo Bowl, all those other bowls, about specific, again to use the phrase, regionality. If you care that much about Penn State, you'll alter your New Year's Eve plans around it. But for the national hope of, boy, some guy in Pittsburgh is going to care about Clemson and Oklahoma, he's going to care a lot more when he's hung over on his couch on New Year's Day than he is to plan his life around not going out for New Year's Eve.
I went to see Concussion on New Year's Day, and usually I don't leave the house on New Year's Day. The important games were the day before, but I wasn't going to spend my New Year's Eve in to watch them. I watched a little bit of the 4 o'clock game to start. That was it, the Clemson-Oklahoma game.
Next year it's going to be worse because New Year's Day is a Sunday. So I don't know what that does with an NFL Sunday and the whole mess up of that whole deal.
Oh, well, that's probably the... Yeah,
is that the reason why they're doing
it? Yeah, no, their original plan, they said, when they came up with this, was they want to do it on New Year's Eve 2 of 3 years. So maybe they started on New Year's Day because of the way the holiday fell over the weekend the next couple of years.
So I think they're going to move those other games to Monday then. Next year, like the non semifinal games.
Yeah, the other bowl games would be on Monday. They, like when Penn State beat Miami for the national championship game, that was January. Was that January 4th? Not January 2nd, I forget. Because New Year's Day that year was a Sunday. They're not going against the NFL no matter what game they have.
So does that mean that the NFL is playing on Christmas? Or what would the NFL do? Would the NFL play on Christmas Eve? Usually the NFL doesn't want to play on Christmas, right? Or have they given up on that?
I don't know. They played. There was one game on Christmas Eve this year, the Thursday game.
Oh, they'll play on Christmas Eve. The Steelers have played on Christmas Eve quite a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't – yeah.
But in the past, haven't they played – when Christmas has been on a Sunday, they've played the games on Saturday?
The famous overtime, Kansas City-Miami playoff game was a Christmas Day, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Yeah, that was about – and then I think you're right. I don't think they play on Christmas anymore.
Either way, it's
I'm not watching NFL mess. On Christmas with the NBA on the other channel, heck.
That's a good point.
SportsTalk@TribWeb.com.
You got Oklahoma City and New Orleans. I mean, how are Steelers-Ravens going to compete with that?
All right, a couple quick emails for Tim. You get out of here. SoCal Lou, I agree with Pro Football Focus. Blake sucks. I'm surprised he hasn't given up more yards. Better with Boykin.
It's funny. I've been in a fight with a couple people on Twitter. I keep seeing the same Twitter handle show up over and over again about various things Steelers related. And just saying Antoine Blake sucks brings everybody together. You know, like you throw out an anti-Antoine Blake tweet, and all of a sudden you're getting retweeted by the same people that hate you.
Lou says, by the way, Tim, I like your question. Please ask it, but Tomlin won't answer. I don't even know why coaches have these press conferences. Chuck is requesting the Pac-Man Patna soundbite. It never gets old, so whenever Taylor wants to throw that in.
He's too busy coming up with a list of great running backs the Steelers could have gotten.
Feeding you for your arguments.
Evan Royster. Ray Rice. Jonathan Dwyer, who I bet isn't a pound under 300.
Oh, God. Please,
Daniel
no.
Thomas.
Would they dare sign Ray Rice and Michael Vick in the same year?
The law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, he of the deflated footballs. Vic Ballard, Mike LaShore, and Joe McKnight.
Joe McKnight. Holy hell. This is what Taylor's done for the last hour and a half, is just look
up. No, he did that in 5 minutes.
Odd running back names.
Hey, yo. Marcus Gilbert. What's happening, partner?
Thank you.
Feel better again?
I feel better. Leo in Jersey says D'Angelo ran well against Baltimore, not just the Bengals running well against Baltimore.
D'Angelo ran well against Baltimore for about a drive and a half.
Yeah, then they quit running him, huh?
And when he started to run, there wasn't as much yardage there.
And Jeff in Columbus, do you think Cowher might consider the Giants' job with the Mara Rooney connection?
This was the job he was supposed to have when he left Pittsburgh back in 2006.
I think he's done coaching. I don't think he'll coach again.
Also, he asks Guy for some wedding advice, or not wedding advice, some wife advice. Guy, my wife informed me she's having book club Saturday night at 8 p.m. in our living room in front of our 46-inch HD screen. Is this grounds for divorce?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
aren't there other rooms in the house you can have book club in? You can't move the 46-inch screen.
Even a judge can say, hey, there's only so much a no-fault state can handle.
Actually, I think it's a perfect time to say, well, I'm going out to the bars with the boys. Then there's no, so that could be fun, too.
All right, Tim, we will live vicariously through you and your audio at noon at the Thon LaPresser.
You got your book club. Cheerleaders and Blush have televisions.
That's the great Tim Benz here on the Team Spanos Group of Raymond James, face of Pittsburgh Magazine, the financial face of Pittsburgh Magazine, Trib Live Radio Morning Show.
In fact, Final Blush Presser. Has its own sports bar specifically right now.
Yes, they do, up on the second floor there. I believe they call it the Taylor floor, the Josh Taylor wing of the building.
Yeah. No comment.
It's like when Norm walks in to cheers, Josh!
By the way, Guy, how much per Manny sandwich coverage did we get last night on
No, yeah, that was very, very...
Not bad?
No, not at all.
Sally, make it back okay?
They actually, to our news director's credit, said they, quote-unquote, didn't want to shill for Permanis, so...
Okay, good job.
Yeah, so...
Restoring some of my
faith in
our integrity.
Community.
There
you
go.
That's so
right.
Overrated.
Mark Cavalli.
Now, if they had brought free sandwiches in, I would have eaten one, but, but they didn't. I'll shill for anything, especially food.
Cavalli next. He will join us from the South Side and talk about this rivalry, Bengals-Steelers, whether he thinks it's going to have an escalation in respect. Also, we'll talk to Mark about cap issues, whether they could have signed a running back, and whether they were faulty in not doing so. Mark Cavalli next.
Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch specials starting at just $7.49 with selections including small grilled chicken salad and bowl of soup, two cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread, and a small salad, half a hoagie and french fries, or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh and online at ilovegiovannis.com.